Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wyatt Street Podcast. I'm your host, Wyatt Street, and today my guest is Ashley Kaika.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing? Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. And today we're going to be talking about studying abroad and the benefits that that come with that. Mm-hmm. So if you're ready to go and get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So first I want to talk about the places you've gone. You told me you've been to Spain, Argentina, and South Africa, right?
Yes.
Why did you choose to go to each of those places?
So the program was not through my university. It was actually a third-party organization. And one of their tiers of programs is IHP, which is an international honors program. And these programs offer three specific locations through your semester abroad. So you spend about a month and a few days in each location. And it's based on this idea that learning is... a lot of learning is through comparison and through analysis. And so it's this idea of like, okay, how can we go from taking, you know, one experience and then comparing it to another experience and then drawing, you know, comparisons and differences. And so it's one of those things. It's very fast paced, but I actually, from all of the programs, you don't get to pick which countries you go to. The countries are a part of the program, so the program decides. And then you can choose out of the program themes. So my theme was cities, people, and cultures in the 21st century. So I went on a cities program. That's why I went to Buenos Aires in Argentina, Barcelona in Spain, and Cape Town in South Africa, because those are all major international cities.
Right. And what did you do in each place? Not just like studying, but you know, outside of the classroom, like what were your experiences like?
Man, I had a lot of experiences. It was a very academically intense program. So it wasn't one of those like go to Europe and party abroad kind of right. programs, which isn't what I was looking for anyway. I definitely wanted to be challenged. And so I mean, we met in New York City because that was where the launch was, the launch site. And we stayed in Brooklyn for about 2 weeks with students from all over the U.S. and outside of the U.S. that I had never met before, I have no idea who they were. There was about 32 of us. And we met at a hostel in Brooklyn and kind of started there. And so I kind of include New York City in that city's program, even though I don't really, it's not an international destination, but it was definitely a part of the trip. The biggest thing I would say is that you just get really invested in the communities there. You know, a city is huge and it has a big population normally, but the program itself wants you to be involved in the politics. It wants you to be involved in the games. It wants you to be involved in the nightlife and every single aspect of what life is like in another city. What, you know, getting invested in understanding, not just looking and observing the culture, but being in it and enthralling it was really... Yeah, it was amazing. I to go into specific experiences is difficult because, you know, there were a lot of academic experiences, but also a lot of, you know, extracurricular experiences where, you know, it's everything is learning, though. Everything is considered sort of an immersive form of learning. It's not you sit behind a desk kind of learning. It's you're going out, you're doing case studies, you're interviewing people, it's very interactive. So it's actually been a little bit of a shock to come back to college, to sit with the lectures again.
It's a little more hands-on.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And what were you studying with this?
Yeah, so mainly we were learning about social justice and what that means and how it does or doesn't effectively work in these places, including the U.S. And we did that through the lens of, like I said, cities, and we would talk to political leaders, we would talk to activists, we would talk to conservative and more liberal and all sorts of different audiences to kind of get an idea of, you know, what are the struggles here, what are the politics here, what are the people, the majority of the people that call this city their home, like how do they feel? And that was really eye-opening to be able to say, like, wow, there's a huge theme of just, like, total inequality and total suppression and, you know, like, all of these, and oppression as well, in every place, including the U.S. You know, a lot of really tangled and complicated histories that have sort of silenced themselves but still very much exist and contribute to the way society, you know, performs today. So like New York City, for example, was founded by or colonized by the Dutch. And there's a huge, I mean, we took a tour of Manhattan and we realized like, wow, you know, Wall Street is literally named Wall Street because there used to be a giant wall there to keep out the natives where they would then go and mass kill all of the natives who originally lived there.
Really?
Oh yeah. And this is a common story in basically every city that was colonized by Europeans.
Yeah.
The natives there were killed, and often through disease, spread of disease, purpose spread of disease, or just, I mean, full on bulldozed out of their houses. And so it's called Wall Street because there was this giant wall, and on one side of the wall facing towards the city that was being built at the time is all this trade. It was the place where all these people would trade, you know, and it was, I think it was the beaver or the otter. It was one of those animals that was like super prevalent there, and that was their main, you know, object or animal that they would trade. And on the other side of the wall, they would keep all the natives out to starve to death and hopefully die so that they wouldn't have to deal with them. But that makes so much sense that it's called Wall Street, because you have this huge financial district where all of this trade is happening in stocks, and
right.
And yet the same kind of activity happened, you know, not that long ago when the Dutch took it over. And so basically we learned how in every single city there's monuments, there's names, there's streets that tell you the history, this complex and really most of the time depressing and oppressive histories of how time and time again these people have been oppressed.
Just kind of gets you thinking, like, what really is behind the names and and everything.
Yeah.
Like, even here on campus at Clemson, Tillman Hall is a big one that's come under fire a lot recently.
Which it should be, in my opinion. You know, I don't think that is a name that we want to represent ourselves as. So, yeah, no, there's every... And the funny thing is most names are men, right? Because men are the ones who had the most power. And so even just seeing that in every culture is... It's like, you know, we're all very different. But in the end, coming back, it's like, wow, we're all very similar.
Right.
It was way more, you know, it was way more of a conclusion for me, was the similarities of the bad and the negative and the patterns versus like, wow, they're so different. You know, it was more like, wow, we're all pretty much the same.
And I guess that kind of leads me into what I was going to ask next, which was, how would you compare and contrast the cultures of the three different countries you went to?
I mean, if you're in what sense, I guess, would it be in the sense of like of personality of the city or like economically?
Well, I guess since what you were studying would be the social injustice and inequality. Yeah. So how would you say they differed or how were they similar in those aspects?
Sure. Yeah. So our first destination was Buenos Aires, Argentina. And that city is very much a still developing city. So whereas Barcelona is this very well-known, you know, international hub, tourist, taken over by tourist populations right now. I mean, almost by 3 million. And so that's like well-known. Cape Town, South Africa is like actually very well-known. I wasn't as familiar with it, but I mean, yeah, it's another huge tourist destination that's still striving to be more well-known. But Buenos Aires was this first location that was, you could tell a lot of the city was under construction. They were still getting over some pretty intense histories of dictatorships, which Spain also had, of Marxism, Marxist sort of communist situations happening in the past. And there are monuments everywhere. It was this really ripe feeling of like history being really present. I would say in Buenos Aires specifically, it's very artsy, I would say, very, I think all of the emotions are just painted on the city. I mean, you can just feel it. It's very interesting and intriguing because it is so new that it hasn't all been, you know, set in stone or, you know, there's graffiti and there's art and there's like these bodies. I remember, I'll never forget this monument. There was like this big statue and there were all of these chalk drawn bodies, and each body had a name on it. And then all over the city, there are these stones with different names on it. And you're just like, what is this? And there are people that were taken during the dictatorship and never found.
Oh.
And they found hundreds of thousands of millions of dead bodies, but they were, you can't recognize, you can't.
Unidentified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all of these people still purposefully and intentionally make their memory live on of these people who they lost, and they don't know what happened to them. They were probably tortured and killed because they were considered either a threat or they disagreed with the current political system. So like Argentina was this really, in a sense, overwhelming sort of like, wow, what have I entered into? And
yeah.
At the same time, it's like, you know, I won't lie, I went out at night every now and then just to have a good time.
Yeah.
And like, there's this really like, you know, not hipster because I don't want to stereotype, but like really just like edgy kind of do whatever you want, be whoever you want.
Kind
like,
of a YOLO kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole city, you could just tell, was in this like trying to sort of repair itself. And all the people were trying to repair themselves. And the other huge thing is to bring race into the equation. Buenos Aires has a history of oppressing people of color. And so, I mean, gosh, if you saw a person of color, if you saw maybe five people of color walking on the streets, that would be like a big deal because literally they have been driven out of the city.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, and now it's like, of course they don't feel, you know, I doubt that they would feel welcome, right? And so I had friends on the program that were people of color, and they were like so uncomfortable the entire time, and there's a lot of things going on, and
yeah.
Argentina was just one of those places where, you know, Barcelona was amazing and Cape Town was amazing, and I don't think I have a favorite, but it was very ripe emotionally and politically and socially. There was a lot of things going on.
A lot to kind of unpack,
yeah.
Yeah. In just a short amount of time.
Right, yeah. And
yeah.
Then it's like the minute you're like, okay, I'm starting to get a handle on things. It's like, well, we're going to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, here we go. Next stop. Yeah. But,
yeah.
And then Cape Town's a whole other story, but I don't, you know, I know you have further questions,
yeah.
So I don't want to go in too much.
And how would you say they each related to America? So the oppression you would see there and whatnot, how would you say it's similar or different to what we've seen here in America, not just in our history, but even recently with some of the events that have transpired?
I mean, basically, all over the world, at least the places that I've been, every single one tied back to race and this idea that the white man, no offense,
the history books are clear.
Yes, the white man has, I mean, for who knows how long, since the beginning of time, has oppressed and driven out people that were considered inhumane or less human or unworthy. And you go to South Africa, you go to Argentina, you go to Barcelona, and it's just like, and then you come back to America and it's like, wow, yep, like all of the histories, every single one is, okay, there's streets and there's statues and there's buildings and there's, everything's white men. Everything is white. I mean, and the program wasn't like, you know, there were white guys on our program. It's not like we were trying to, by any means, like tear them down. But at the same time, it's like, okay, yeah, this is a huge common denominator of anywhere I've traveled, is this extreme, intense, in-your-face presence of, here's what we did, here's why we're great, here's what, like, how we did it. And then there's this really deep, complex, hidden history of all these terrible things. And then the reality is both of these sort of, the past and the present kind of coming together and creating what we have now, which is like this sort of slow evolution of people speaking up, which is great and necessary, and we should be way further than that. But unfortunately,
yeah,
we're not. And so in every place, what I realized was like, you know, America is pretty new too. I mean, think about Barcelona and how long, you know, like think about these, like Spain, and, you know, we're fairly new country. And so it was crazy to me to see, like, okay, you know, the Dutch came into New York City, and then, you know, we were obviously colonized by Europeans as well, and how just that simple fact of like who the colonization of a space and of a place and what it means to take up a space and take it away from someone else and without their consent, and you know, like how that has impacted the way we think and who we allow to have power and who, you know, the kinds of people that we consider powerful people or are able to handle themselves. And so in each place it was like it was intense. It was a lot to swallow emotionally to see like how deep it all goes.
Yeah. Especially considering the fact that, you know, here in America we like to think that, you know, we're better than everyone.
Right.
That's, you know, a common idea, and every country feels that it's the best in the world, obviously. But, you know, we would think that we are further along than a lot of places.
Yeah.
But then I imagine it was probably a little weird to then go to these places, see the struggles they had, come back, and then realize that we're really not that much farther along.
Yeah, and also just the way that people perceived me as an American woman was really interesting experience. Like, understanding my positionality is something that I think every single human should go through, at least those who are inherently privileged because of their race. And although that's that's an unfair, unequal, like, you need to be aware of it. And if you're not aware of it, then you're doing everyone around you and yourself a disservice. And so to understand my positionality as a white American woman for the first time and what that meant to the audiences I spoke with around the world was like absolutely crazy experience, and I would never trade it for anything. But it was like understanding a privilege that I don't deserve, you know, that I shouldn't have.
Something that shouldn't just be given to you inherently.
But to talk about what that means and to talk about what I do with that and, you know, the decisions that I make on a daily basis and how that affects people and how people viewed me as, like, you know, they would immediately, I remember my host mom in Argentina was like, so you have a big house, you're American. And I was like, what? You know, like, it's like, that's really what the media, it's exactly what they want them to think, is that everything's bigger and better here. And it's like, no, I mean, Barcelona is a pretty well-developed city, and Buenos Aires is right on its way, and Cape, you know, it's like everything has their own things going on. And it's like the fact that we're in this giant global competition of who's the best, it just goes to show like how unhealthy humans are right now, of like, really, we're thriving off of oppressing other people to try and be on top, you know. It's a lot to grapple with.
What would you say would be your biggest takeaway then from the experiences you had in those countries?
My biggest takeaway, it would probably be that, I want to, it's hard because you know, you want to say something so broad, but then it loses significance because it's so broad. But basically, like, I learned that, you know, no one is going to make something right for you, and no one is going to do the right thing on your behalf or for, you know, you can't wait around for the world to fix itself because it's only going to get messier. And you can't sit and stay silent. You know, I used to just like kind of have disagreements in my head with professors or friends or things they would say, that would be offensive, or that I would be like, well, that's kind of not okay to say, but I wouldn't say it out loud because I didn't want to have the conflict. And coming back from this trip, it's like, there's not time for that. You know, there's not time to just sit in your chair and be quiet because these things don't affect you. Like, you don't have, like, that is, you shouldn't have that privilege, first of all, you know, since that's not going to affect me, since, like, I feel like since I'm out of that, I'm a little bit higher socioeconomically, I'm not really going to worry about, you know, using 5 straws a day because I don't have to, because I have enough money. You know, it's like that, it's just there's not time for that. And if you really care about people and you care about the mark you leave in the world, then, you know, just like, I think a lot of people need to stop being so quiet, because I really believe that at the very core there are a lot of good people, but we've just been trained to get used to what we've been told is okay instead of challenging these things. And that's why this course is so great, because it teaches you to actually critically analyze, and that's what my course abroad taught me was how to critically analyze politics and humans and decisions that we make every day, and not just say like, well, it's, I do it because it's what I do. It's more like, why do I do it? Who did tell me that? Why did they tell me that? What are their motives? You know, yeah. Like just actually learning how to analyze these things is probably my biggest takeaway.
So what, if anything, do you think America then could maybe learn or take away from what you discovered or learned in those places?
I think America would do well to stop making it about materials and start making it about people. It just feels like the laws and the politics, everything is what you have, what you can get, how much more you can make in order to get more. You know, it's always like this never-ending staircase, and it's just you keep climbing it until you die. And I think if we all sort of turned our focus to like, well, what's best for the community, and thinking in and as a collective. I mean, our society is a very individualistic society, right? That's capitalism. Yeah. And so when we start to think more about collectivism and what it means to sacrifice a personal thing, a personal desire for the good of the group, for the good of the community, and actually having that bring more good and better, more effective results than just doing what's good for you.
Yeah.
Which is what we're trained as kids to do, right? How can we get ahead? How can we color better in the lines than she can? We start comparing ourselves to people immediately almost since we're out of the womb. And it's like, well, what if there was something to train us to do otherwise, to start thinking more about how to help and how to build and how to act together versus how to get ahead as an individual.
And to start wrapping up a little bit here, would you like to go abroad again?
Absolutely. I think that you can never see enough and experience enough.
And where would you most like to go next if you got the pick?
I think I would most like to go somewhere in the Middle East. My sister went to Israel, it was 5 months ago. And I would love, you know, I've never been a history buff or anything like that, but talk about complex and really, you know, I would love to just settle there for a couple months and get to know a community and hear people's stories and break down my own, you know, unknown subconscious stereotypes of the Middle East as being an American and what it is. And because
right.
I don't, you know, I'm not going to choose to see the Middle East as something that's just been shown to me on a screen, because I know that's not what it really is. And you simply can't generalize a people, a country, a place, a city, you know, as small as it is, I refuse to believe something just because the TV screen shows it to me. So I would love to go there to break down those barriers and to bring it back with me and to share with people like what this place really is and how cool it is and what's different and unique. Yeah,
I think that would certainly be a great experience.
Yeah,
definitely an eye-opener probably.
Yeah, for
especially
sure.
Considering the images that were shown that are probably a vast minority of what's actually happening.
Exactly.
Well, that's all we've got, all the time we've got for. So like I say, once again, thanks for coming onto the show. That was Ashley Kaika. I'm Wyatt Street, and we'll catch you on the next episode of this podcast.
Wow.
Yes, I am sure.